Who's Talking is brought to you by University Square, a collection of locally owned high-end shops and restaurants offering unique products and free storefront parking. Visit University Square on Franklin Street, downtown Chapel Hill. University Square. See you there.
Now, here's D.G. Martin on WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. In the spring of every year, a lot of Chapel Hillians move over to Durham, lock, stock, and barrel, for the annual full-frame documentary film festival. And now our Chapel Hill neighbor, Deidre Hodge, is the not-so-new executive director of the film festival. Deidre, we talked to you last year when you were really swamped because you were brand new and you were organizing the festival.
Exactly.
Now you're the experienced and everything's fallen into place, right?
I would say last year was a little bit like being a bug on a windshield. Wow. Being taken for a ride. Yeah, this year it's a whole different experience and a really enriching one.
Well, it's all crowded into the weekend of April 14th through 17th.
That's right.
Coming up. That's right on us. And so all right, let's just start with this. Some people have told me, well, I can't go to the film festival. It's sold out. I mean, that's kind of great news that it's sold out. The passes have sold out, but the festival's not sold out.
That's right. I think one of the things that happened last year is we sold out a third of our screenings. And there's never really truly a sellout at Full Frame because we hold our inventory so closely. And what I mean by that is we have passes. And a pass is really just a group of tickets, and people buy their passes in advance. It gives them the privilege of choosing which films they're going to see before everybody else. And then we hold back inventory for advance tickets, which again gives someone the privilege, instead of buying a big pass of tickets, just to choose individual tickets beforehand so they ensure that they get a seat. And then last but not least, we sell tickets the day of the screening. And we even have a last minute line. And I think a lot of people don't know that if you go to the box office and they say this film is sold out, there's a good chance if you stand in that last minute line for $5 in cash, you get right in and you go see the film.
This is interesting because the ticket is it's a little bit complicated.
Well, if you're not accustomed to going to film festivals, sure.
So, but sure. Let's start at the just to. This is very selfish
because sure.
I've got some people who would like to go and they're scared to go because they've heard sell out.
Right.
And so. If everything else doesn't work, if you can't buy a ticket, more than likely you can stand in that...
That last minute line.
90% of the cases, I think, you can stand in that last minute line and get a seat with... And you just give them $5 in cash right
there? That's right. Well, so I can think of only two situations last year where you couldn't have gotten in at the last minute line. And that was our opening night film, which was a huge sellout, right? And then Restrepo, which of course was up for the Oscar this year, which was about Tim Hetherington's film about being embedded with soldiers in Afghanistan. And Restrepo, we told those people in the last minute line, we said, you know, probably this might win an award. And we rescreen everything on Sunday. So even those folks that didn't get in on that last minute line, which were a handful, you figure a handful of people didn't see two films out of 100 films last year.
And they're always...
That's a pretty good number.
If I'm, again, hell, heck, I'm just... this is all very selfish to be sure that I can go, I stand in the last minute line, and if it's one of the 1 or 2% of the films that does turn out to be a sellout...
Right.
Mostly. I can go around the corner and see something else that's great.
Well, that's the thing about Full Frame that's unique among film festivals. Most film festivals are spread out among their community. We take up one very large city block. It's maybe a total of 4 blocks, from the Durham Armory to the Durham Arts Council. And in between is the Carolina Theater and the Durham Convention Center. And that's where all the theaters are. So you can literally step down the hall and be at another theater.
Finally, Deidre, and then I'll stop with this. But one of the things that I've learned is that if you're not willing to commit and not interested in committing to the whole, you know, full weekend.
Right.
That you can go over to and you just want to experience it. You can drive over to Durham, pretty easily find a parking place over there. And you could just drop by and take a film at random.
Well,
just walk in and it'll be good.
They're all good. I mean, one of the things we did this year is we have a free screening every day. So there's the opportunity to see something for free every single day of the festival. We've never done that before. But we instituted free screenings all year round this year, and we found them to be incredibly packed. People really want to come see these documentaries. In many cases, these are films that will never screen in North Carolina again or before. So, you know, at the festival, there's a free screening if you don't feel like paying the money. There's, you know, outdoor screenings that we do in Central Park, which are huge community events. And we even are having a food truck rodeo on Saturday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. So all the food trucks will be there. It's a way of us giving back to the community
and our sponsors
giving back to the community. But really, I think the ultimate point of that, of what you're bringing up, is that there is a subject pretty much for everybody. Those films are already on our website. You can already take a look at them. And even with regard to the parking, you know, we even have a valet service that asked to come work with us this year. You know, they're working independently. But even if you came and you thought, well, I'm just not sure what to do, there's going to be a valet right by the Marriott, which is also part of that whole landscape. And you just, you know, have somebody else park your car.
Well,
it couldn't be easier.
All right. Well, I think we've made this. We may talk about that a little bit more later. But the other thing, and some people who are listening to this saying, I thought I was going to learn something about the films that I might be able to see.
Oh, we can talk about that.
So what's your 30-minute elevator speech about what? You know, what are a couple of the highlights of film?
This year?
Yeah, this year.
Well, obviously our opening night film is just a rich and wonderful and broad experience. It's called Guilty Pleasures. It is a premiere by Julie Mogan. And it's a film about romance novels and how romance novels affect people. I had no idea, but cultures all over the world. And the director follows a woman in India, a woman in Japan, a man who writes these novels, another man in Britain, and one of the models in New York, actually, who does the covers of these books. And it's very visually rich, and it's a lot of fun. It's very entertaining, but it's what all best documentaries are, which is it's very, very human. And it talks about how we're all related humanly. So that's opening night.
More on that, on romance novels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but is it about people or is it about romance or about writing novels? Or?
Well, I mean, they do explore the people that write them, which is interesting.
To focus on those people who are the authors of the books.
And one of the men is the focus of that. But mostly it's about how all of us, and especially the people that are fans of these books, of which there are millions and millions,
right.
How we view romance as human beings and how that really doesn't shift culture by culture.
It's just so funny that, you know, you probably don't know this, but Lee Smith wrote a book about 10 years ago about a group of her college friends coming back 30 years later. They had gone down the Mississippi River together on a raft. And then they, this time, of course, they traveled down in a luxury steamship. But one of the characters was a romance writer, and the whole thing kept coming back about how this sort of plump, you know, not real attractive woman was writing these lusty scenes. This will be more of that.
That's exactly what that is. It's about how we live in our imaginations and how we love in our imaginations.
Now, you've told us that the opening nights are often sellouts. Is there a chance for anybody listening to this to see this? Or
they could buy a ticket as of April 4th. If you're not a pass holder, you can just get on the web and buy a ticket right now.
So it's right now, it's probably not a sellout, but you better go. You better go ahead and get your...
It's usually a full house that is in Fletcher Hall, which holds 1,000 people,
yeah.
So you have a better chance. All of our most popular programs will be in Fletcher. Almost without fault. We also enlarged the spaces that we're using this year. So, for example, we create two theaters in the convention center. Last year, we had one that was smaller than the other. This year, they're both almost at 500 seats apiece. So we've made room. We realized how much we sold out last year, and we've really kind of accommodated for that.
So the effort at the film festival is not to have is to be close, but not to have a sellout.
Well, at some point, you make people uncomfortable. You don't want people to be anxious. You want people to have a good, relaxed time. After all, the word is festival. You know, you should be having a good time stressed out.
Well, let's move on that for just a second. And then we're going to get back. Stick with us. We're going to talk about some of the other films. But what I love this idea of festival. And you talked about the food court or the food truck.
Rodeo.
It's
a roundup.
What else do you all deliberately do In addition to just having a whole bunch of people who love to watch films who are there to talk to each other and run into each other, and what else do you do to make it a festival?
That's a great question. There are parties every night, so some of those are invitation only, but some of them are ticketed. For example, opening night party you can buy a ticket to, and it is always a fun bash, and that will be Thursday night after the opening night film. That'll be held at the Durham Arts Council, and we have a late night scene. So after the Saturday night party, for example, there will be music playing, I know, that will be spun by a particular DJ that has to do with the music that we have played in a particular film outside at that point. That'll be at Full Steam Brewery. Then Friday night, we have a film by Rodrigo Dorfman, who's a North Carolinian, and the musicians from that film are actually going to be playing at the BU Cafe, and that'll be the late night scene then. So that's a small example. This year, our sponsor Merge Records, who actually won a Grammy, won a very big Grammy, and they're based right there in Durham. Merge has provided the music for when you come into the theater. So there'll be music when you're walking in.
In every theater, there'll be music coming in?
Right.
Merge Records has selected the music and provided that for you as part of their sponsorship.
That's right. It's a seating music that you might hear in a regular old theater, and we're providing that now through Merge. So, just different ways to make it a more enjoyable experience. But it's always, and you've been there, Giorgio catering has the food on the lawn.
There's Giorgio walking around having a good time.
He's there at the plaza cooking himself, and, that food is out there. And it's a pretty unique experience that you can sit down in that plaza and be next to somebody from any part of the world and start talking about a movie you just saw and share a meal, share a glass of wine. It's a lot of fun.
I think that's the part that I like. Maybe that I can say I like the best. And that is when you come out of the movie, I don't want to say this, but even if you don't even go to a movie, just to go in that sort of central plaza around which all the movies, are sort of in a circle.
Right.
There are people coming in and out of the movies, and they're getting a snack out there on the terrace. Or even if they're not, they're just sort of sitting there trying to figure out what movie they're going to go to next. And almost every time you run into somebody that you hadn't seen for a long time,
right,
or you run in to make a new friend.
I right.
mean, it's just and so the festival is, I'm sure there's a lot of planning to it, but it's just you've got a group of people together who have similar interests and they're having a good time.
It's true. My staff refers to it as throwing 99 weddings. So I think that's an apt conversation. If you're throwing a wedding, you want people to have a good time.
Well, we're visiting with Deidre Hodge. She's the executive director, if I got that right.
Executive
director of the Full Frame Film Festival, and we're talking about this year's festival. We're going to talk more about the films after this short break. We'll be right back. Who's Talking is brought to you by University Square. It's locally owned, high-end shops and restaurants, and free parking on Franklin Street, downtown Chapel Hill. See you there.
Now, once again, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Deidre Hall. She's the executive, Deidre Hodge. She's the director of the Full Frame. Gosh, I'd never get the full title right, but I just say Full Frame Festival. But
you can
you
say, that.
Say that. What, I mean, it's got a whole longer official name, doesn't
it? It's just the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival.
And what is a documentary film, and how is it different from just regular film?
Well, the documentary form has actually expanded a lot in the recent couple of years, where people are trying, semi-faux documentaries. There was a very popular film in the theaters last year called Catfish, where, nobody's really sure if it was true or not. But documentaries are everything from journalistic pieces to expressionistic pieces, where you could just see there's a film this year called Tugs, which is really a visual exploration of tugboats. It can be many different things, but I think the biggest difference is it's not a narrative feature. It's not a written fictional story that follows a narrative line. It is instead someone gets a camera and wants to cover something and goes and covers that, whether it's visual, impressionistic, journalistic. It's,
how many of
it's
these
truth.
Films, how many of these films will be featured at the festival this year?
We have 99 films this year.
Again, it's April 14th through the 17th, that weekend coming right up. And you talked about Guilty Pleasures as sort of being, I didn't want to say you can't say favorite, but it's the opening night, something that you, without apology, say this is something everybody is going to enjoy.
Yes, I think it would be broadly attractive to
about
people.
About authors of of novels that
when readers of romance novels.
Romance novels.
Yeah.
What else? What would be another headline film that's...
Well, I mean, I want to give everybody that doesn't know the festival a little bit of a review in that we have about four different kinds of programming. We have the new docs section, which are films that are new films.
Brand new. Some of them being shown for the first time.
In fact, we have 25 premieres out of the 99 films this year. And these films will be in competition. So they are competing for cash awards and prizes. And anybody that attends a film can vote for that film for the audience award, which is voted on, obviously, by the audience. So that's one segment of our films. The other is always a thematic program where we invite a curator to curate a series. This year, that's Rick Prelinger of the Prelinger Archives. He'll be showing archival footage and talking about how archival footage, the use of it, the ethics of it, how it can be used more ingeniously than it has, and how it's been used quite effectively.
Now, there are a series of films associated with that?
Yes.
The curator, so he's not only bringing sort of a, this isn't fair, classroom approach in terms of talking about this, but he's also going to have a bunch of films that we could see.
Absolutely.
Even if we don't participate in
films that are actually part of the National Archives that you might not see otherwise.
These are older are not brand new, and some archival.
Correct.
But documentary films.
Correct. Talking about the use of documentary. Goodness.
Can you give us an illustration? I mean, this is not fair because I'm jumping you with this.
Illustration
of a film in this series of the.
Well, one that you may have heard of, which is. You know, I hate to say it's academic because it's not an academic program at all, and this is what I love about this series of films. But Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, which, you know, you may have heard of in your travels. So, you know, talking about everything from that
period.
Remind
us about Brother, Can You Spare a Dime.
Well, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime is archival footage that was put together and there are Hollywood clips in it, but it's all about the Great Depression. And so that was an archival piece, a great example.
So this is let's get this straight for me. This is a documentary film that was put together some time ago, but it was also put together with archival film.
I mean, that's the point.
They reached in and got old film, and then the trick was how a filmmaker put it together.
Correct. But we also have a film in that series, which is also one of the new docs. It's called Black Power Mixtape. It's a very popular film. I believe it showed at Sundance. And this is about the Black Power movement. And there's footage in there of, you know, Huey Newton and people from that movement that you've probably never seen before. So this is a good example of how you can span. There's a breadth here from older footage to, you know, the Black Power movement, of course, is in the 60s. It's a real exploration of the use of archival footage right now. And, of course, there are many documentaries that you see that are using archival footage. One of our center frame events this year is The Loving Story. And I'll get into that in a little bit if you want to talk about that. But there was all this footage uncovered of the Lovings. And the Lovings were, the case was the Supreme Court case of Loving against Virginia.
The marriage.
Interracial marriage. And what ended that at the Supreme Court level. And what I find fascinating about this film is, number one, it's directed by our founder, Nancy Bersky. It's her directorial debut.
No, you're kidding.
Yes.
Oh, well.
And that will be premiering.
So the reason you've got the job is because she left to do the kind of work that she'd been showcasing.
I suppose we could think of it that way, yes. I think it's very exciting that she's done this film.
Wow.
But what I think is really neat about that is you've obviously heard of D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hegedus. They're both on our board. And they were part of the Verite movement where filmmakers would go and, you know, shoot real life. They didn't move the camera, or they were actually the first ones to move the camera and really capture and not edit as much, et cetera, to capture what real life looks like. And one of the women that worked with them at that time shot this footage, gave up filmmaking, and left it in her garage. And in the course of making this film, Nancy found this woman in this footage. So you have this Verite footage from, you know, the very birth of that movement in documentary filmmaking. Ricky Leacock and D.A. Pennebaker and Chris Hegedus. And this woman had shot this footage of The Lovings. And it is absolutely fascinating to see them in their home with their children. You know, like there's this beautiful shot of Mildred Loving putting her daughter's socks on and the way she, you know, plays with her feet and does that and stoking the fire.
You know, this is great for lots of reasons in terms of both history and also sort of as a window into the continuing. I mean, Durham's sort of a leading place for as we develop. As we move forward with developing better race relations and a place to look back, because you've got you've had a struggling civil rights community in Durham all along, and all of these issues are even more relevant in Durham than they might be some other place.
I must tell you, when Nancy and I talked about that the film would be done, and the film will be on HBO, and there was a chance that she could premiere the film in New York City at another festival, and I said, you know what, this film belongs in a theater that was segregated.
Yeah.
And that's the Carolina Theater. And the resonance it will have, you know, I mean, the Lovings are no longer with us. Their daughter will be there. We will have a panel session moderated by Walter Dellinger, who we all know in our community here at UNC really well.
Right.
It is really going to be very moving.
Do you remember what day that's going to, the date and time for that?
That Center Frame event is... Oh, I want to double check.
Well, we'll check on that, and we'll get back.
Right.
I tell you what, let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back, and we'll have the date and time for that film about the Lovings, which is something maybe if you just want to see one film, that might be one that you would want to go see. So, Deidre Hodge is our guest. She's the executive director of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival. She and I will be right back. Who's Talking is brought to you by University Square, a collection of locally owned high-end shops and restaurants offering unique products and free storefront parking. Visit University Square on Franklin Street, downtown Chapel Hill. University Square. See you there.
Now, here's D.G. Martin on WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Deidre Hodge is my guest. We're talking. She's the executive director of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival that we're visiting about. And, Deidre, we took a break because we were talking about this film that I got really interested in about the Loving family. This is the interracial marriage Supreme Court case.
Correct.
For many reasons, this is going to be an important film for our community and the Durham community. And I wanted to tell our people when they if they just wanted to see one film, they could drive over to Durham and see this film win.
Right. This is Friday at 5 o'clock. And we do what are called center frame events, which means we give more time after those films for questions and answers and a moderated session. So one of the attorneys that actually tried that case in front of the Supreme Court when he was very young will be there. And I love that footage about these two men. I mean, at that time, they're ACLU lawyers. They were very young, and then they caught up there, and they were like, my God, I can't believe I'm before
the Supreme Court.
I am standing before the Supreme Court trying this case.
This just happens to be something that I'm interested in. Maybe not everybody in today's environment remembers this case about the Supreme Court case on whether or not you could keep people from different races from getting married.
Right.
And it seems like it's ancient history, but it really isn't.
It really
crosses over into the kinds of issues that we're facing today.
Well, and in fact, the last state law, I believe it was in Alabama, and I believe the film talks about this at the very end of it, didn't go off the books until 2000, despite the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable in our day and time.
And it's for those people who are taking part in the debate about whether or not we should have gay marriage or whether we should have a state constitutional amendment to define marriage as solely between a man and a woman. All these issues that are current and which we have different ideas about. The analogies to the laws against racial marriage, or interracial marriage, are very current in terms of the discussion about what we do about the idea of broadening marriage to same sex.
Certainly the Loving case is cited a great deal in those discussions. It's not as much explored in this film, but it is certainly resonant because of that.
Well, Now we've talked about two films. There are 99 films.
99 films.
And so we're not going to be able to talk about all of them. But if there were another, you know, thinking about people in Chapel Hill and thinking about people who are not regular attendees, are not going to go over for the whole thing. If
sure.
there were another film that you try to sell to Chapel Hill, say, just come on over for this one film.
What? I can't narrow it to one, but let me tell you about a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a deal?
That's perfect. No, that's even better.
We, every year, give a career award. This year, we're giving it to Ricky Stern and Annie Sundberg, and we show a retrospective of their work.
You're going to have to tell us a little bit about them.
Well, let me tell you about them. They're very young. We are premiering the U.S. premiere of their new film, Burma Soldier, which is the story of Mio Mint. He was actually a soldier in the Burmese army. He became wounded, and then he started working for the opposition. He is now in Washington, D.C. He'll be down here for the film, talking about the struggles in Burma. That's a very, very interesting film. But they made a film. One of their first films is a film you're probably familiar with called The Trials of Daryl Hunt. Mm. Daryl Hunt, of course, was a North Carolina man unjustly accused of a rape. He was African American. And through the course of a decade, he was kept in jail. Even after DNA evidence showed he was innocent, he was sent back to jail. It is a fascinating example of documentarians sticking with a subject for 10 years, for a decade, to watch justice actually unfold and to watch how complex that system is.
And is that film going to be shown?
That film is shown. And as we are also showing their film that they did right before Burma Soldier, which is Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. I mean, how different can this film be than the Daryl Hunt movie? And it's actually, whether you like Joan Rivers or dislike her, it is a uplifting and alternately heartbreaking look at probably what is the hardest career in Hollywood, which is being a stand-up, and being a woman stand-up in particular. It is a really great movie. I really enjoyed it, having been a performer
Yeah,
before.
I was going to say that you let's get off track for just a second and talk about you for a minute, and not because you remind me of Joan Rivers. I mean, that's not but you do share an experience of being a performer, both the highs and the lows, and what a performer has to go through.
And I think you really experience in this film. You see Joan Rivers as a human being and not as her brand. And that's unusual. And that is great filmmaking. That is the key of great documentary filmmaking, to be able to get a subject to relax enough.
So you saw this film and you said, hey, I identify with this.
Completely, especially in the moments when she's backstage before she goes on stage. There's a moment.
What am I going to be able to do this?
There's a moment with a heckler, and the way she handles the heckler, and you know how she talks about how to, you know, protecting the audience in that moment, what you need to do, how fast she's thinking. It is really, truly, and she talks about how degrading it can be to be a woman in this profession. And she was the forerunner. It's a great, great movie.
I think
movie.
It's, for me, it is the lesson that anytime you're out front, and as a performer or for any other purpose, or like you're out front right now, not everybody's going to think you're doing a good job.
That's right.
You know, and you have to get used to the not being able to please everybody.
Not being
and
liked.
Just kind of pushing forward.
There's that film. There's also another film they did called The Devil Came on Horseback, which is about Darfur. Brilliant. Again, just a great career.
What's
retrospective.
The name of that movie?
The Devil Came on Horseback.
And that's going to be shown as well.
Part of this career award, you know, retrospective.
So what you do is you pick somebody who's or a partnership of people who have been involved in this enterprise of making documentary films and have been great successes, and you want to take note of that. And so you get many of their films and show them, and then this time you got a premiere of their work.
It's a happy accident that we're actually premiering one
and
of their
then
films.
We get to know those. You showcase these people. You bring them down. Is that right?
Correct. They'll be here. They'll receive the award during
well,
the
just one more time. You told us a little bit about them. Tell us some more about the people. They must be characters.
You know, I don't know them well personally, and a lot of times we don't. We do know a lot of the great documentarians because they sit on our advisory board. Mm-hmm. And many of the people whose work you've seen have been advisors to us, including Mr. Pennebaker, who is one of our favorites. But I can tell you that any team that can work together like that, we honored a team of women last year as well. It just happened that way. But I think it's unique when you have a team of filmmakers. It's understandable because it's so hard. But it's also about great communication and great collaboration, which reminds me of another film we're showing.
All right, go to it.
The great Bill T. Jones, will be here with the world premiere of a film called A Good Man.
All right, now who is Bill T. Jones?
Bill T. Jones is one of the probably foremost modern dancers with the Modern Dance Company. It was the Bill T. Jones and Arne Zane Dance Company in the United States. He's known internationally, and he decided to create a work about Abraham Lincoln. And you know,
all right, now, whoa, here's a dancer.
He's
not doing the filmmaking.
Well, they followed him making the dance piece.
Oh,
there's
he
a film
he
about did, him making this piece.
Oh, okay. So he's a dancer who's making a...
He's a choreographer.
To make a dance that honors or that looks back at... I got this right?
Well, what he's talking about in the film is the myth of Lincoln, how he says in the beginning of the film, you know, Lincoln was the only white man I was allowed to love. And then... doing the research about Lincoln and finding out there was a much more complex story about race and Lincoln, and creating a dance piece which is highly political and at the same time artistically fruitful. And it watches the artistic process in a way that I think a lot of people don't understand until you get into a film like this, where you can watch a process of how does someone put their politics inside their art? Can they live together? Can they work together inside of an artistic piece successfully? Obviously, married to the man I'm married to, I think it can be done. But I see it in this piece.
For those, Deidre Hodge is my guest, and she's, of course, married to Joe Hodge, who is... also famous in this community because he runs the Playmaker. Oh, he
Correct.
Didn't say he runs the Playmakers. He presides over the running of the Playmakers.
He is the
Playmaker.
Producing artistic director of Playmakers Repertory. And, you know, it is a wonderful piece about understanding how an artist works and how that process can go. You get to see behind the scenes in a way that you generally would not in a multi-dimensional piece.
It's just a fascinating look. This is just made for me. This film.
Yes.
Because what I'm usually just an observer of an artistic work, a symphony, a dance piece. Mm-hmm. And I just have to say, in criticizing the people who bring that to me, mm-hmm. They never tell me enough about what went into it and how they happened to. They're willing to say, here it is, take it for what it is, and that's the way it is. But to get behind it on the inside of a production of a very important controversial artistic piece, in this case, a choreography of a dance.
Correct.
I mean, I'm just wild to see this.
That will be on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock
right,
in Fletcher Hall.
What's the name of this?
It's called A Good Man. And that is the name of the dance piece that he created. It's just a great, great piece. But the great Bill T. Jones will be here. And, you know, I think he just received the Presidential Medal of Honor at the Kennedy Center from Obama this year. I am so excited that he will be here at Full Frame, and that will be on Sunday in Fletcher Hall after our award ceremony at 2 o'clock. And he will be here. The filmmakers will be here. It's very, very exciting. And I think, again, exciting because it's Durham for the reasons of, you know, it's not just about an artist making a piece. It's also about an artist of color making a piece in America. And there are only very few people that can talk about that with that kind of authority, and Bill T. Jones is one of them.
Let me just get it straight. Bill T. Jones is not the filmmaker. He's the subject of the film.
Correct.
Now, you'll also have the filmmaker.
Yes, we try always to have the filmmaker
but he will
come.
The filmmaker will be here?
Yes, they will be here as well because this is the world premiere of this film.
So what you got, I mean, this is kind of fun for me, but you got what I think is maybe as interesting a thing as you can have in the art world, and that is the inside look at the development of a piece of art, performing art in this case. And then you have but that's what you see. Then you got the opportunity to go inside and quiz the makers of that artistic piece about what was going on in their heads.
Absolutely.
And why they wanted to do it.
Absolutely. Well, it's
great.
A wonderful experience.
Sunday afternoon
at 2 o'clock.
And the name of the film?
A Good Man.
Good Man. We're talking about the upcoming Documentary Film Festival. Deidre Hodge is the executive director of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival. And April 14th through the 17th in Durham. Deidre Hodge and I will be right back. Who's Talking is brought to you by University Square. It's locally owned, high-end shops and restaurants, and free parking on Franklin Street, downtown Chapel Hill. See you there.
Now, once again, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Deirdre Hodge. She's the executive director. She's a Chapel Hillian and is the executive director of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival that's coming back to Durham, as it does every spring, this time April 14th to 17th. Deirdre, I warned you that we wouldn't be able to cover much in terms of the films, but we've covered a lot about a few of the great films that are being featured. And another thing, if those of you who are listening have joined us a little bit late, we've also put aside the idea that just because the news reports are that the passes are sold out. I think, Deirdre, you persuaded me that I can go over there and watch I can get a ticket to almost any film I want to see.
That's correct.
Either by buying it in advance on the web, or if I haven't gotten around to doing that, just driving over, and probably that last-minute line for $5 I can get in and see
a
film that I
absolutely
want to see.
I have to brag on our staff because they handle that inventory so closely that it's very rare that somebody is left not getting into a film.
So that's great news, is that you've got at the high level of, you know, expensive passes, you sold those out. So that's good.
We sold those out 2 weeks in advance this year.
That's fantastic. For the rest of us who are either last minute shoppers always, we can see the films we want to see.
Absolutely. And there's a free film every day. Free film every day.
Now, of those films, of the 94 films that we haven't talked about.
Yes.
Are there some that you'd like to talk about quickly?
Oh, I have to, because it's hard to choose, but I love so many of them. I'll rattle through a few. I should cover our last Center Frame event, which is called Page One Inside the New York Times. This is a look inside of the New York Times.
And when will that be? You don't have to tell me much about that.
You should come see it. That'll be in the afternoon, I want to say on Saturday. But great film, and people coming down from the New York Times to talk about it with us.
And is that one of those that'll be in the big Carolina Theater?
Yes. So all the Center Frames happen in Fletcher Hall, and they have an extended Q&A period. They are not in competition. They are invited programming because all the films that are in competition have a level playing field, different size theater and same Q&A, same rules. But let me tell you about some of those because they're really exciting. There is a film called Being Elmo, which is about the man that actually is behind the puppet of Elmo. It sounds like a kid's film. It is not.
Elmo, the Sesame Street character.
The Muppet.
That, your grandchildren.
Correct. There is a film called Buck, which is about Buck Brannaman, who is actually the man, the horse whisperer. And you may have seen the film, of course, with Robert Redford.
So this
Redford.
Is the real
the real man.
Wow.
And he talks a lot about his past. He was abused by their father and how that led him to be the animal trainer that he is. As he says, he fixes horses with people problems. You just have to see it. It's actually really beautiful. If a Tree Falls... the story of the Earth Liberation Front, wonderful film by Marshall Curry. Marshall was with us last year with Racing Dreams. This film tore me up. Great film because he strives to stay even-handed on this.
This is a film in competition?
This is a film in competition about the Earth Liberation Front, where young people who went out and basically chained themselves to trees and blew up places where they felt that there were companies harming the Earth. And they were eventually all tracked down and sent to jail. And it's about how... what is terrorism? What is eco-terrorism? If you're doing something for the right reasons, where does that land? And it's a very powerful film, a really interesting film.
Yeah, well, Marshall Curry debuted his first film, I think, about the New York mayoral election 6 years ago. Street Fight, yeah. And he's got great North Carolina connections.
He does. He's a wonderful returner. And, and another returning hero would be Steve James, who, of course, made Hoop Dreams. And Steve James has a film which just got picked up yesterday for distribution. It's called The Interrupters.
And he's coming back?
Yes.
With
He's on our board. The film is called The Interrupters.
But you're not showing Hoop Dreams again?
No.
Oh, phooey.
This film is in the neighborhood where gun deaths are the highest in the United States in Chicago, and it is about a group of very brave people that when they know someone is going to kill someone else, they literally go to them and talk them out of it. They get into their community in the most grassroots way possible. This was a big hit at Sundance. You'll want to see it. Another one that was at Sundance that is a very important film is called How to Die in Oregon. It talks about, in the state of Oregon and in Washington, you have the right to take your own life. And it is a very intimate look at some people who have made this choice. It is a very brave film. I think the subjects of the film are brave. It is just a very beautiful piece to watch and a really, really terrific piece of filmmaking. Now, on a different front, there is a film which I had seen as a work in progress called Hell and Back Again. Hell and Back Again is, first of all, it's visually stunning. It won the Cinematography Award, among another, won another award at Sundance. This follows a Marine who happens to be a North Carolinian, and this man was embedded with him in Afghanistan, and he was wounded, and he follows him back to North Carolina and talks about, you know, I think the quote is, the parking lot at Walmart became more of a challenge than Afghanistan was. And that soldier did not go to Sundance with this film, but he will be with us at Full Frame.
And where does he live? Is he a North Carolinian?
He is a North Carolinian, and he's one of our boys. And when I even saw the work in progress,
I'm not sure I can see this one.
Yeah,
this
will be deeply moving and a little harrowing to watch, but I think important. And I'm really thrilled that the soldier will be with us. And
what do you have the time on that, Deidre? Where can we go?
To our website, which is www.fullframefest.org, and all the times of all the films are there.
We'll have a link to that on our website. We'll have a link to
Wonderful.
Your website. So for those of you who've gotten interested in one of the great films that Deidre Hodges told us about, you can go to that link and find out more. I wish we had time to talk to you.
There's so many films I'm in love with. The bad thing about talking
to you is I want to see all of them. They're 99. And what's the world's record for somebody seeing films during the festival?
I don't know what the record is, but I do know that there are people that can go over 20.
Wow.
And that's pretty impressive. And I have to tell you, you know, we not only do the films, but we have conversations. And there will be two marquee conversations talking about film.
Our conversations come to an end, though.
This
has been so wonderful. Deidre Hodges is the executive director of the Full Frame Documentary Film Festival in Durham, April 14th to 17th. Even if you can't go for the whole thing, drive over. Just come over and have the experience. Thanks.
Thanks, DG.
And thanks to all y'all for listening. It's Who's Talking? I'll be right back here soon.